From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, President Donald Trump and the border wars, how his policies have worsened the situation at the border, and how that's a good thing for Trump. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the new book, Border Wars, Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration, the authors, New York Times journalist Julie Herschel Davis and Michael D. Shear, gives us an understanding of recent U.S. immigration policy. We learn what is driving these policies and how well they are working. Texas is the state that is most impacted by the orders to harden the border and make asylum seeking as difficult and as dangerous as possible. I spoke with Herschel Davis about President Trump and his signature issue.
As we watched his first year in office unfold, it became pretty clear to us that the story of his immigration agenda and the ways in which he was going about trying to sort of force it through was really the story of his administration itself and the way that he, as an individual, sort of governs or operates. It's about, you know, a person who is not steeped in details, very actually distrustful of the policy specialists, very focused on looking tough and strong, has certain ideas, not very nuanced about, you know, what he wants to do, and is constantly casting about for more and more aggressive ways to get done what he thinks is the appropriate thing. And often runs into pushback from the professionals inside his government who are being confronted with these ideas. But, you know, that in a nutshell is not just the story of his immigration policy. That's really the story of the whole Trump administration and President Trump himself.
Does President Trump see the immigration issue as critical for his reelection?
I think he really does. I think he feels like it was one of the major issues that propelled him to the nomination, the Republican nomination in the first place, that allowed him to win the election, that it's something that cuts through and across in some ways some of the conventional fissures within the Republican Party. And so I think he has found it to be incredibly sort of profitable politically for him. It's something that he thinks gives him a huge advantage over other Republicans. And now it's something that's part of his brand. I mean, so much of what Donald Trump is about as a president is sort of about, you know, being an entertainer and a performer and giving crowds what he thinks that they want. And he really thrives off that feedback loop at his rallies and at public events. And so immigration, this issue that's very emotional and visceral for people, gives him that payoff. So I think he feels like it's critical for him to keep talking about it and really to keep ratcheting up his rhetoric on it as he gets closer to the reelection campaign.
So is this the singular issue that his base wants him to accomplish? Out of everything else, you know, trade, other stuff that's going on, as long as he holds fast to building the wall, doing something about immigration, immigrants, then this his base will remain solid.
I think that is true in many respects. It's certainly what he believes. And when I have gone to his rallies and when I've gone out around the country to talk to voters in every area of the country, be it someplace near the border in California or Texas or someplace in, you know, the Midwest, nowhere near the border. This is something that his supporters constantly return to when you say, you know, are you concerned about how things are going? Do you think that he's doing a good job as president? They have various complaints. They don't always love his tweets. They don't always love the policies that they see emanating out of Washington. But they say, but, you know, he's building the wall. And that's really important to me. And he's going to crack down on immigrants. And that's really important to me. And it is really, I think, as much a policy priority for them as it is sort of just a signifier that this is a president who understands them and has their interests at heart. And that is, I think, what Trump has understood about this issue that maybe other politicians have not. That it's as much a symbol as it is a practical issue when it comes to appealing to voters, that some of these has, you know, as sort of the backbone of his base are working class people in some communities that are feel very left behind. They want someone to blame for their economic misfortunes and hardships. And in many cases, that the instinctual place they go is to blame immigrants and immigration. And the fact that he talks about this constantly really sort of speaks to them of that, and that he is a person that they can trust.
I think it's important that we do hit pause and take a step back and take a look at the issue of immigration and ask, is there really an immigration problem in the United States, something that needs to be solved?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that attracted Trump to this issue is he wanted to be the person who was like, outside of politics, outside of Washington, I'm just going to come in and fix what's broken. And he felt that immigration was a good example of the ways in which Washington has failed, because for years there had been all these bipartisan efforts to overhaul immigration laws, and they had failed. I would say that I don't think that there is an immigration crisis in this country, but there is no question but that the immigration policies.
But those are two different things.
Correct.
So let's talk about the immigrants. So when Trump says someone's doing the raping, it has to be the immigrants. Okay. Is that true?
The ways in which he talks about the crisis, quote unquote, of immigration are created by him. There is no invasion of dangerous people, you know, clamoring their way across the border to come and kill and otherwise hurt Americans. That's just not happening. I mean, there are migration flows from Central America. They have been happening for a long time. But, you know, these statistics that he likes to bandy about, you know, immigrants are, you know, harmful and they're criminals and they're rapists. Some of them. He always caveats that with some of them. But clearly, he makes a sweeping generalization that just is not borne out by the facts. If you look at any of the data, the research that's been done, immigrants are much less likely to commit crimes than native-born Americans. It's just not a thing. So that aspect that he constantly talks about is not, you know, is not something, A, that exists, B, something that he has really done anything to address. I mean, if he thought that there was some sort of a, you know, crime wave among immigrants, that is not how he has conducted his policy. But it's a rhetorical device that I think he finds useful. And it's what he comes back to whenever he is criticized for his stance on immigration, that yes, it's tough, but if we have even one person come across the border that might commit a crime, it's worth it.
And do we have open borders? Without Trump's policies, then it's open borders.
No, we do not have open borders. We have, as are all borders in this day and age, we have a border that is constantly being crossed for reasons of commerce and immigration and all sorts of other things that is patrolled by American authorities. And yes, if migrants arrive at the border and they say that they're fearing for their lives and they can't go back to where they are from, there is a process by which they are allowed to come in and make that claim. And in Trump's mind, he considers that to be open borders. But in reality, that is just our immigration system that, you know, in compliance with American laws and also international laws, allows people to claim asylum if they are fearing violence or persecution if they go home.
So we don't have open borders. We have a very robust Border Patrol agency and a lot of money that's spent, billions and billions of dollars, to patrol our borders and keep them safe and secure. And then we also don't have an immigration crisis where we have hordes of horrible people streaming across the borders trying to undermine law and order in the United States. So then what we actually have is theater, right?
Right. I mean, I would also say that we do have a system that, you know, has a lot of problems in terms of the way that immigrants are processed in our system. Right. There's a huge backlog of asylum seekers. There's a huge wait to get a green card. There are lots of bottlenecks in the system that I think you could argue, and many Republicans and Democrats would argue, are impractical and ultimately not sustainable and should be addressed.
Right, but that's not what Trump is promoting. He's promoting not fixing the immigration system, but stopping the immigration system.
Correct. But I think it would be naive and not productive to say that there's nothing wrong with the immigration system, because there are plenty of ways in which we do have a dysfunctional system that does need updating. And frankly, I think that one of the side effects of all of his rhetoric and all of his misrepresentation of this issue is that we are much further away from any real consensus on how to address those very real problems than we were before he became president.
You write that the president's overarching goal was to make the experience of crossing the border into the United States as terrifying and as perilous as possible. What do you mean?
Well, we all know and have heard how obsessed he is with the idea of the border wall. And that was, I think, as much a practical idea as it was a symbol for him of, I'm going to be tough. I'm going to sort of put up this barrier and people are not allowed in. I don't want people in. It was a rhetorical device as much as it was a policy proposal. But what became clear once he became president was, to the people around him who were there to sort of implement his vision, was that it wasn't really enough for him to actually build this barrier. What he really wanted was a formidable, kind of menacing, scary thing that was going to deter people, he thought, from even trying to cross. He wanted it to be, you know, as threatening as possible, as painful as possible. He talked about putting spikes on the top of the wall, having it potentially be electrified. He wanted it to be done in flat black paint, both because he thought it was beautiful, but also because it would get hot in the sun and it could burn people. He talked at one point about digging a trench that could be filled with water and potentially having alligators in it or snakes in it, something that would either be so bad that people would never bother to approach it, or that if they did, would hurt them very badly. These were all measures that he kind of grasped for when he thought about how he could control the flow of people coming into the country. And, he didn't actually implement most of them.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm speaking with Julie Hirschfield Davis, co-author of the book Border Wars, Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration. We have the Rio Grande, at least in Texas we do. That's basically a moat. It's fast-moving water. People drown in the Rio Grande all the time trying to cross. Mm-hmm. And it does have alligators in it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them. Why did he think we needed to have a moat in addition to that? Did he not know that there was there was a river there?
I don't think so. I mean, of course he knows that the Rio Grande exists. This is not a president who focuses on any kind of detail. He had not been to the border very often, although he did visit it a few times. When he would be told by aides, and they would say this often, that there were plenty of natural features at the border that were, you know, big enough deterrents to people that would prevent people from crossing, even if they wanted to, he would take that in. But he, and this goes back to the idea that this is less a practical idea for him than it is a messaging thing. He was fixated on this notion of one long wall, one long barrier that was going to be impossible to cross. And nothing that his staff would say to him, whether it was about, well, there's already a very dangerous river there, or, well, we can't really build on some of this property in Texas and California because people own that property, really mattered to him. He would say, well, just take the land and we'll they can sue us, you know? He was not really focused on, he has not been focused on any of the practical limitations here.
He also said that U.S. should shoot the people trying to cross the river, right?
Trying to cross the border, yes. Last summer, when the caravan sort of started up again, and he started wanting to talk about it because it was getting close to the midterm congressional elections, and he found that to be a useful theme, he talked about if some of the migrants at the border, I think there was a day or a few days where there was some rock throwing at the border. He said if people were throwing rocks at American troops or Border Patrol, that they should consider that a rifle, which was his way of saying basically they should shoot them. If they get rocks thrown at them, that they should shoot migrants. And his staff very quickly, having seen him on Fox News saying this, spun into action, sent him and the White House the rules of engagement at the border, which say that you can't use lethal force unless you're threatened in a lethal way. So they got him to publicly walk back that comment. But in a meeting a few days later, when they were discussing, you know, what could be done, he said, well, I understand. You've told me we can't shoot them to kill. But what if we just shot them in the legs? Because that would slow people down. And he thought that would.
It's been quoted that Stephen Miller, who is the, I guess, the Svengali in the White House on immigration. What do you call Stephen Miller?
I would say Svengali is not a bad word. I mean, he's a mind meld with Trump on this issue. He's, I would say, the most influential person in that White House when it comes to immigration.
And he was quoted saying that regardless of the optics, when the focus is on the border, on immigration, even if it's children in cages and crying, Trump is winning. What does that mean?
I think that he feels that this is an issue where Trump is at his most powerful. That, you know, as we discussed before, this is the issue that propelled him to victory in the Republican primary, victory as president, and that it is something that plays to his best strengths. And whenever they're talking about immigration, Trump is talking about his brand and is getting a message to the public that accrues to his advantage. And I just think that that's why we see that whenever Trump is under pressure on any issue, choose your issue, or getting close to an election, this is where he goes, because he thinks that this is such a powerful theme that really riles up his base and reminds people why they supported Donald Trump in the first place.
So it was a year ago when Donald Trump sent troops to the border. This was right as we were getting ready for the congressional elections, the midterm elections. Trump went ahead and he ordered the Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, to go to the border and deploy those troops. When Jim Mattis was asked about that, is this a stunt? He said, we don't do stunts. Was this a stunt?
I would say this was a stunt, yes. There was no military reason that troops were needed at the border any more than they ever had been in the past. Now, there had been precedent for sending the National Guard. George W. Bush did it at one point. Barack Obama did it at one point. To help assist with border operations at the border, and that had been done in the past when the migration flow had built up, and they felt like that was needed. And it, to be fair, in both of those cases, I think you could argue that part of the reason they did it was because of optics, because there was a real uptick in the number of people who were coming, and they wanted to make it clear that we are going to be enforcing our border, and if it takes some military personnel to back up our border agents while doing that, that's what we're going to do. But this was something else again. I mean, this was the president really wanting to do something because he felt that he couldn't do anything else to really be more aggressive at the border. And even when we interviewed President Trump for this book in the Oval Office in this past spring, he lamented to us how, you know, we have this great military, we could have 100,000 people, you know, on the border, 100,000 military troops on the border, and they could never do anything. They just couldn't do anything. And you could tell it really eats at him that it is not possible to have the military essentially take action against people coming across the border to hold them back. In his mind, that is something that should be allowed.
But it's significant that the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, would use the military as a political stunt in the weeks ahead of the midterm elections to influence that outcome.
Yeah, I mean, it's striking. And
shouldn't we be thinking about that going into his reelection?
Well, I mean, I do think that nobody should be surprised if this idea of sending the military to the border or somehow doing some very high profile enforcement action, either at the border or in the interior, resurfaces as the election draws nearer. I do think that this is something that he wants to be top of mind for voters. And he wants to do it because he thinks it plays to his strengths, but he also wants to do it because so much of what he does on immigration policy, as with other issues, has to do with provoking a reaction from Democrats, right? And so if he does that, then Democrats cry foul, they're outraged, how, you know, we can't be doing this, this is un-American. They get riled up about the fact that he's sending troops to the border, and that's his opening to say, well, Democrats don't want to enforce the law, Democrats are for open borders. And, you know, they may be sweeping generalizations and they may not be legitimate, but voters don't really understand, many of them, how these things work. So in an argument like that, I think in his mind, Trump is likely to win, because if you ask people, do you want the border to be enforced? Do you want just anyone to be able to come in to this country without processed, or we don't know who they are? They would say no.
So back to the point that Stephen Miller said, anytime that we're focused on the border, on immigration, doesn't matter what the optics are, Trump is winning. So there are some policies that the Trump administration has done to aggravate the immigration situation, like ending aid to countries like Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, which actually makes those economies worse off and increases immigration from those countries. If you were trying to aggravate and create more illegal immigration, that's what you would do, right?
Yeah, along with some of the other things that they've done, like, for instance, set up metering at border crossings, where essentially they take in, they process fewer people a day. But the result of that was that people got desperate. And in many cases, they went around the legal ports of entry and they just started to try to cross in other places, antithetical to what he was trying to get done.
Also, you have these now refugee camps that are being set up in Mexico on the border, where people, they look desperate, they look poor, because they are. Someone looking at those folks would say, I don't want them in America. I feel like my life would be in grave danger if those people somehow got across.
Right. And some of these programs that they've tried to put in place, some of these deals they've tried to cut with Mexico to have Mexico basically house these people outside of the United States while their asylum claims are being processed, basically yield just that. Not to mention the fact that because of all of the other factors we talked about, which really did sort of stoke the influx of people who are arriving, the actual detention facilities in the interior of the United States have become overrun, overcrowded, in many cases squalid, because they made the decision at the highest levels that they were not going to let people go while their claims were adjudicated, but they were going to detain them. And so that you have a system that's really at a breaking point. And, you know, that's where we saw earlier this year all those horrific pictures of children, you know, in dirty diapers and dirty clothes and people without toiletries and things like that.
But there's also the claim from some people who are advocates for the immigrants. They say that the administration holds back large groups of individuals from being released from immigration detention, and then they will release them all at once, hundreds at a time, so that when they arrive in places like San Antonio, that you do get those major optics of, look at all of these people. And it plays to Stephen Miller's observation that anytime we're talking about this, Trump is winning.
Well, right. And I mean, it was Stephen Miller's idea, along with others in the White House and in the administration, to drop off some of these people who were being released out of immigration detention in sanctuary cities, essentially in cities that, you know, have said they are not going to forward the names of people that they arrest to federal immigration authorities. And part of that was to ratchet up pressure on Democrats to essentially create a spectacle of all of these immigrants sort of just being dumped in the middle of a park or a city or somewhere, and they don't have any place to go, they don't have anyone to call. And I think that was Miller's way of trying to put political pressure on Democrats who have been against President Trump's immigration agenda.
How did this become Trump's signature issue? Does he believe this in his heart, that that this needs to be done, or is this just political opportunism?
I think it's both. I mean, I think clearly the political opportunism is driving a lot of this. He saw when he was, even before he was formally campaigning for president, the power of this issue, how much enthusiasm and emotion and real visceral anger it stoked, and I think found that to be really compelling. And his advisors kind of made sure that he would remember to talk about it by proposing to him the idea of a wall, because he's a real estate guy and he likes to talk about building and things being beautiful, and this is his wheelhouse. And so that's how they got him to keep on mentioning it. But once he did, it started to be a real sort of feedback loop for him that he almost couldn't resist. He would talk about the wall, people would scream and yell adoringly, and he would think, wow, this is really what people want. That said, I mean, I do think that this is his instinct. I mean, he clearly, from some of the comments that he's made privately and even publicly, indicate that he has a dim view of immigrants from at least some parts of the world.
Nigeria, where people live in huts.
The S-hole countries, you know, Haitians all have AIDS, he said at this one meeting. I don't think those are things that are put on.
Why would we want people from shithole countries to come here? That's what he said. And he said he would rather have people. Why aren't people from Norway? Is that what he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had just had lunch with the prime minister of Norway. And so that's where he went. Norway, you will note, is 85% white.
You say there are bigotry instincts at work here.
Yeah, I think so. Even people who have watched him for years describe him almost in loving terms as, you know, he's kind of like Archie Bunker, like, oh, a little bit bigoted. He says offensive things, but, you know, I think the implication for them is, you know, heart of gold, but he just says, you know, he's the guy with his beer at the bar, just speaking his mind. But, you know, it's hard to avoid the reality of what he says when he's speaking his mind.
But the policy, we look at the policy, right? That's what your book's about.
Right.
And this is policy that is causing human suffering?
In many cases, it is.
That could be avoided if there were a more humane response that would not jeopardize American national security or the lives of Americans.
That's right. And the great irony of it is that if he really wanted what he says that he wants, which is to say, I just want an orderly system where Americans are safe and things are working the way they should, he has taken this country further from that even than it was when he took office, because what is happening now is real sort of chaos in some of these border areas. The system is now overrun in large measure. The backlogs are not getting better. They're getting worse. And so, you know, and we saw this with the family separation policy. You know, it's not as if he's solved the problems he set out to solve. If anything, they've gotten worse.
Julie Hirschfield Davis co-authored with fellow New York Times journalist Michael D. Shear the book Border Wars, Inside Trump's Assault on Immigration. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes to listen to, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.